you know that the way this works is that we have this phone call at 9 o'clock Pacific time every week, and then I post the phone call, or I send it to some trusty assistant to post, and so it's available for review. You can listen to it, and people who were not in on the phone call can listen to it too. And my impression last term, for the last class, was that that worked really well. That people appreciated having that resource, and that the people who took part in the phone call benefited from it. Although I should let you speak to that point, and that the people who were not in the phone call found it a way of feeling connected to what was going on. And then, of course, the other part of what we do, which is to my mind probably more important, is the discussions that take place online, because I know that that what I say can be helpful for people, but the best way to engage is really to be sharing your comments and thoughts and questions online, and I certainly tune in and participate in that too. But I think the exchanges among the people taking the program are really important and significant. So that's by way of introduction to this pre-phone call. We are going to be starting with the reading. Everyone knows that the reading list is available online, right? Yes? Okay. I'm hearing no objection.
I didn't see it.
Oh.
I didn't either.
Me neither.
Oh, okay. How do they get to it? Kathleen, can you tell them?
Okay, first of all, there's a couple new people. I have to still set them up in the system.
Okay.
And then you would get to it on the TSK under the online course, and the link is guidance and phone calls and guidance under the TSK series.
So,
and it's on there. And I'll send it out again in an email to everyone after this call.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea, so that instead of people having to master the intricacies of the website, which are not, so difficult, but you have to kind of figure out what's going on. If it just goes in an email, then you'll have it. The reading for this coming week, I can tell you, is pages 51 to 53 of Dynamics of Time and Space. And also, as a review, the front matter, part of the front matter from Love of Knowledge, pages, Roman numeral pages 26 to 30. In Love of Knowledge. So that'll be the reading for this week, and then the phone call that we have next Sunday will discuss that.
Okay.
So that's the plan. Hello, who's that?
Hello, Greg. This is Karin.
Hello, Karin. So we're getting underway, but you haven't missed too much yet. So welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah. So last quarter we focused on space, and I thought it would be a good idea to do a little bit of a review, and probably in the course of doing that, it'll become clear what the approach is that we're taking here. And let me say that I really welcome your participation in this phone call. This is not meant to be a lecture. It usually kind of starts off that way, but then eventually people ask some questions and we have some discussion, and I think that's...
Sorry, I'm going to mute.
Okay, and I think that's valuable. I thought a good way to review, just in a very, it'll be a very short review, is to look at the first sentence of the reading for this week. Since the reading is only about 2 pages long, that's maybe 10% of the reading for this week, but anyway. The first sentence in From Dynamics of Time and Space says, "Space and the freedom it offers are available at the center of present experience, just as it is." Actually, I'm going to look at the first two of the sentences. So that's the first one. And I'm going to unpack that a little bit. I'm going to say something about that sentence and really how we approached that during the last unit. So The first thing it says is space is available at the center of present experience. And in terms of space, that's probably the most fundamental thing you can say about the TSK vision. We live in a world in which we understand everything in terms of identities and substance. You know, for something to be real, it has to have an identity, and it has to, in some sense, have substance. So even if you're in the middle of a dream, you know, what's going on in the dream seems to you to have substance. And even if you're, for instance, imagining what you're going to be doing on vacation next year, that has its own kind of substance. It's a thought, and thoughts are substantial in the way that thoughts are substantial. They're not substantial in the way that computers are substantial or chairs are substantial, but they have their own kind of substance and their own kind of identity. And, of course, the most fundamental identity that operates in the world that we all accept as real is the identity of the self. So a focus on space is a way of questioning, challenging, opening up the identities that we are always looking at. And one of the points that we looked at pretty carefully last quarter was that when you're focused on identity, space disappears. Because space is just what's not there. Space is what has no identity. And there's no way to get in touch with it. And so the TSK vision, really, in terms of space, is all about connecting up with the availability of space. And the way that we were trying to do that last quarter, and the way that I think, you know, that we definitely are going to be doing it again this quarter, and as we shift our focus a little bit, but still are working with space and identity, is to look in the middle of ordinary experience. And that's also contained in this first sentence that I read. It says, space and the freedom it offers are available at the center of present experience, just as it is. And that's an important point in terms of how we're actually going to proceed, because although you can do TSK in a lot of different ways, you can explore it in a lot of different ways, the focus that I have, that we've been looking at, is really to look in terms of your ordinary experience. In other words, you could sit down, you could go on a TSK retreat, and you could really do a lot of the exercises, and that would be great, and it would be very rewarding. But there's also a way to look at or to work with TSK where you're just looking in your ordinary experience. And the way that we did that last quarter was to turn away, this is at least the way we started and focused on for the first few weeks of the program, turn away from the content of experience to what we were talking about as the non-content level. So the feeling tone of experience, the underlying structure, the way we structure experience, the sense of embodiment that goes with all of our experience. I think those were the main elements that we looked at. And the idea is that if you're at the level of content, content is really just another word for identity. You know, if somebody says to you, what are you doing right now? And you say, I'm participating in a phone call. You're labeling that experience. You're giving an identity to it. And that's the content of the experience. And that's always the answer people expect, or almost always the answer that people expect if they ask the question, what are you doing? They want to know what's the content of your experience at this moment. If you say, what's going on? You're looking for content. So we were trying to look at something else. We were trying to look at the parts of our experience that are not content, but you could say accompany content, but they're really just as important as content. And the value in doing that is, first of all, it takes you away from the most rigid part of our experience. The content is really, what I mean by rigid is that when you experience what something is, then it's actually very difficult to change it into something else. You know, you only get one shot. You say you identify your experience, and then that's what it is. And maybe later it changes over time. You know, sometimes you meet a person and you have an immediate reaction to that person, and that's who that person is. And then as you get to know the person better, maybe that reaction changes and you shift to a different identity. But at any given moment, the identity that you assign to the situation and the things in the situation is pretty rigid. Whereas these other non-content elements are more open and fluid. And that's one reason that we were looking at those. Another reason is that it's at that level, for instance, the level of emotional responses or body reactions, that our whole structure, what it is that we give an identity to or the identity we arrive at, it gets set up at that level. And so by looking there, we get a chance to see how our experience is set up, how we turn things into things, and how we assign them identity and define them. So that was the basic approach, and we will continue to work with things along that line as we go into the course. The point of doing that is also brought out in that first sentence when it says, I won't read the whole sentence again, but it basically says space offers freedom. And that's, in a nutshell, that's what we're looking at. If we're not bound to identity, if we're not bound to things and substance, and if we're looking within our present experience to discover the space dimension, what we're actually doing is inviting greater freedom into our experience. So we stay with experience the way it is. We do practice like that. And in the course of doing that, we discover a dimension, a level of freedom. So I've come to one of those moments where I feel like I've been talking all the time and I'd like to hear from somebody else. Maybe it would be useful if people who were in the program last time, and that's most of you who were in on this phone call, if you could share something about your experience. You know, how did that go for you? What did you find that was helpful, or for that matter, what did you find that was frustrating and difficult? So I know it's always hard for somebody to just jump in, but...
This is Hayward.
Yeah.
I found the notion that experience has no substance to be very useful in terms of kind of zooming in, bringing my attention in a closer, more penetrating way into afflictive experiences or experiences that were unpleasant, and have them open to more space and room. It helped dissolve constricted or reactive states by moving past the surface of it into the nothingness of it.
Okay, good. Anybody else?
Yes, this is Roger. When I was in last quarter trying to focus more on space, I would sometimes get a feeling of being, shall I say, unmoored, like losing a sense of location. And initially it would be a bit unsettling maybe or disturbing, but after that initial reaction, it is sort of liberating in a way. I get that impression from it too, that losing the sense of location can be a little frightening, and also gives a feeling of lightness to it in my experience.
Okay, good. Let me just say to that and this is a very typical TSK response, and I hope it's not just kind of something I'm saying automatically, but I think it's really true. If you find yourself lost, or you know, unmoored, as you said, like losing the sense of location, I think that's a very nice way to say it. That is also a certain kind of position or identity. You know, you're now saying, oh gosh, I used to have a position and now I have no position, so I'm in a lost place. And that's also possible to open up. But these things tend to move in layers. I appreciate that, you know, there is a certain unsettling quality to it. It sounds like you also glimpsed something, glimpsed the liberating side of it. So that's good. I appreciate that. Anybody else want to say anything?
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
When we open experience to a more spacious ground, how does action or direction how do we move or respond from there?
Yeah, in other words, if I understand you correctly, you're asking, don't we need a sense of identity and a sense of things being real, you could say, in order to operate in the world? Is that right?
Without orientation, without direction, what informs action?
Right. The answer to that has to do with the whole, I would say, and I mean whole as complete rather than empty space. If you're not limiting your what's going on in terms of identities and labels, then everything in a sense flows together, and that might sound, I guess, like a kind of a little bit like Roger was saying. This, you know, if everything flows together, then it's one big soup, and you drown in the soup. But I think in experience, it's not like that. When everything flows together, then, and this may be helpful, one aspect of that, part of what flows into that totality is the past and the future. So you could say just the whole temporal dimension. So a situation is constantly evolving, and if you are kind of riding with that because you're not taking any position, you're completely open to the whole movement, then it moves forward into the next moment. I mean, that's the one way we have of experiencing time, is from moment to moment, and maybe you challenge that, but for right now, we don't need to challenge it. We just say, in the next moment, there is a natural development from one moment to the next, and because you're involved in that, at the deepest, if we talk about the deepest level now, you're not taking an identity outside that flow, then your responsiveness to the situation is just a part of the flow. You respond appropriately. And it's not because you make a decision to respond appropriately. It's not because this person over here, who happens to be me, is dealing with that situation over there. It's just because there is a kind of accommodation. Everything moves along into the next moment. And there's really no possibility of getting it wrong, because the next moment is the next moment. You know, it's just part of the whole thing. It's very much an integrated whole. Now, that's a pretty pretty far advanced way of describing it. Actually, I mean, it's easy enough to describe it that way. It's just words. But to actually experience things at that level, I think is you know, not something that we just immediately leap into, but the more you can let go of the identities that are limiting a situation, the more you begin to get this sense of freedom, which is what we were talking about before. And freedom means, in part, means freedom to respond in the appropriate way. So the idea here is not that you, kind of withdraw from the world because now you're just in this spacious realm where nothing counts and nothing's real and nothing matters. The idea is that you are a part of the unfolding dynamic of what's happening. And turns out that that's actually a very good place to act from. I mean, you get better results. So that's, as my answers tend to be, that's a little long, but I hope it helps. Okay, well, I wanted to go on to one more sentence in dynamics and then turn just for a moment to the section from Love of Knowledge, which is in the readings and which we read at the beginning of the last course also. Still in the first paragraph, I'm skipping one sentence, but he's talking about space and how space has disappeared because we're so focused on objects and things that are in space. And he says, to recover space presence, we must clarify the operation of the thinking mind. And I guess I won't bother with the rest of that sentence. That sentence, or part of a sentence, sets the direction of this course. He's saying that the reason that space has disappeared is that we have set things up in a certain way. We have focused on identity, we have assigned labels, we have put ourselves at the center of experience, and then we accept all of that as real. And we accept it ultimately as more real than the space that allows it, or as the only reality. And what does that is thinking mind. You know, it's the mind that it makes sense out of things. We talked, I think we used that term, that phrase quite a bit last quarter. It's the mind that makes sense out of things. And so what he says here is we have to clarify the operation of that mind. And that's what we're planning on doing in this course. We start off with thoughts and thinking, and the way that we're going to approach that, and you know, there's a lot of different things you could say and do, but the way that we're going to approach it that I think is very consistent with one of the main themes in the TSK vision is that thinking kind of builds itself up in terms of larger structures, and one way to talk about those structures is stories. So we'll look at thinking, and then we'll move on to the stories that get shaped out of thoughts, although it's actually more complicated or more interesting than that, because the stories that shape our experience also structure the thoughts that we have. You can really only have a thought that fits within a story. So we'll be looking at that thought-story dynamic. And then as you look at stories, it turns out that the story that matters most to us is the story of the self. What Rinpoche calls at different points in these books, the story, here I am. He says that's the founding story. That's the one that we're pretty much always telling. And then we elaborate on that. You know, here I am participating in a phone call, just to take an obvious example. So that's what we're going to look at. That's what the whole course is about.
I have a question.
Sure.
Is the phrase thinking mind mm-hmm. a convention of language, or is there a distinction between thinking and mind?
Okay, good. It's pretty much a convention of language. The idea that there is a mind that thinks, if you reflect on that, I tried not to use the word think, if you reflect on that for a moment, you see that what's presupposed in that is something that has substance, which is the mind. And then the mind goes around thinking. And TSK, although Rinpoche doesn't put it quite this way, I don't think, TSK tends to be more of a verbal way of looking at reality rather than a substance way of looking at reality. So, in other words, it usually makes more sense to talk in terms of a verb than to talk in terms of a noun. A good example of that is that even though TSK talks in terms of knowledge, it also talks in terms of knowing, and then winds up making a noun out of the verb knowing by talking about knowingness. And that's because it's more natural when you're looking at things from a TSK perspective to look at the activity. The activity does not necessarily lead you in the direction of an identity. So when you're talking about thinking mind, the thinking is very open. The moment you start to talk about thoughts, now you've closed things down, because nouns are substances. You know, they name things. And mind is another example of something that gets named. And so as you're suggesting, thinking mind is kind of a construct And really what we're going to focus on is the activity of thinking.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Can I make a comment?
Sure.
I guess we're going to now start looking at how the thinking mind operates on maybe the kind of material we looked at in the first course, first semester. Well, one of the most striking images for me was that all we ever see is surfaces.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of posit some substantial interior that is heartless because it's not ever the object of direct experience. So that, like, I found that very useful to just look at what we're basing identities and substance on, just the surface of something, and we don't see the rest.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like, that's a good starting point from looking at the operations of the mind. What are we actually experiencing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's that is one of the images we used last quarter and that's in the books, and I think it's really it is helpful, because the funny thing is that when we insist on a reality that's grounded in substance, it seems as though we're focusing on substance precisely because it's kind of solid, you know. It's not just some fantasy. It's got real, you know, weight and height and depth and those things that we think of in terms of physical space. But in fact, all we ever experience, as you said, is the surface of things. And so it may be that those surfaces get built up in a very different way. They're not what we think they are. And even the whole notion of substance is a superficial notion. And I emphasize the word superficial because it's a great example of a good way to do TSK, or something to be sensitive to in TSK inquiry. We're talking about surfaces, and when we talk about substance as a superficial notion, that takes us right back to the notion of surface, because that's
right.
Basically what superficial means. So we have a very superficial understanding of reality, and if we get serious about what that means, it means we have a very surface-oriented notion of reality. And we're looking to go deeper than that in a way that doesn't think that deeper means substance. So, actually, that brings me to a point I wanted to make related to the other reading from Love of Knowledge, but I want to make it more generally. When you're doing the reading, you know, some of you, well, I think everybody here has at least taken a look at the TSK books, it's always an interesting practice to read in TSK. And just the general instruction for reading is just to read very openly, very thoughtfully, in the best sense of the word, to read in a very inquiring way, to be questioning what you're reading, to be taking it back, looking back at your experience. And some of that is discussed in the selection from Love of Knowledge for this week. Rinpoche gives some suggestions about how to approach the book. I just wanted to add one more thing, and I'm not sure, we probably talked about this in the last course, but I'm not sure. And that is to be sensitive to some of the ways that Rinpoche plays with language. He will tend to use a word sometimes in an unusual way, but sometimes it's just a question of putting two words together in an unexpected way. And in one sense, you could say, well, he's just playing around. He's not making an argument, and that's absolutely true. But when he puts two words together, that's a way of giving a depth to what's being said. And going into that depth is already a kind of a practice. And I have one very simple example from the reading for this coming week, where he says, I guess I need to look up the context. It's on page 28 at the top, and he says, if we pursue knowledge within a conventional framework, and you have to see what he's talking about in that context. But he says, if we pursue knowledge within a conventional framework, the point may be missed and the vision dismissed. And it's just that little play between saying you miss the point and dismiss the vision. I won't try to say too much about that right now, but why is he putting those two words together? I guess the real thing I want to say is those were very deliberate choices, and he's inviting us to look. You know, what would it mean? Well, I guess I am going to say something about it. What would it mean to dismiss the vision? Because very often that is what people tend to do with TSK. Even, you know, they read it and they say, oh, that's really interesting. Lots of good ideas there. Or they read it and they say, I don't get it. You know, this is too hard, or, you know, the kinds of things people say about TSK. And they wind up dismissing the vision. Well, why do they dismiss it? Because they've missed the point. And why do they miss the point? And you have to, again, kind of look at that in a very literal way. Here's the point over here, and they miss it. They go off to one side. And why do they go off to, or, well, maybe that's not quite right. How do they miss it? You could say they miss it because they never get to the point. You know, we talk about get to the point, right? They never get to the point. They miss the point. And the reason they miss the point is because they're operating within a conventional framework. So just by that use of language, he's inviting us to really reflect on the structures that we use to make sense out of experience. Because, again, we rely on substance, and substance comes out of labeling and identities that we assign, and so language plays a tremendously important role in that. So in your reading, just try to be sensitive to that. It's not like, this is not a class in literary criticism or literary theory, but the words matter, and reading is an exercise. And so I suppose for this coming week, it would be good to try to read the assignment, which is very short. All our assignments are going to be very short. To read it with a sensitivity to the language. Don't feel like you have to, you know, sit down and diagram out every sentence or something. But just let the words resonate. And when there are little connections like that, like miss and dismiss, if you're reading in a way that's open to what's being said, that will kind of penetrate into your understanding. Yes?
Doesn't dis usually reverse the meaning of, negate the meaning of?
Yeah, that, right, exactly, and that's what's going on here. So
we haven't missed the vision, we've labeled it, we've kind of identified it.
Right, and that's exactly right, and so we dismiss it. You know, we miss it, we miss it, and because we've missed it, then we're able to dismiss it. If we didn't miss it, we couldn't dismiss it. Okay, well, we're done for this week, I think. That's probably just fine for this first phone call. I appreciate that you guys all tuned in. I will send this along. I don't know, I'm going to start off by sending it to Kathleen and Tracy, the recording of this phone call. And we're kind of in a transition right now. Kathleen has other work responsibilities now and is not going to be taking as active a role, and I've asked Tracy to get involved with that. But one way or another, the phone call should be posted pretty soon. And I also will write a little introductory note to the online discussion that is based on or is related to some of the things we've talked about this morning. So that's it. Thank you all for participating.